Religion on the Line. 2 hours of exploration into the world of spirituality, faith, hope, love, or the hot buttons of today. Talk about it now. 576-7710. And now, Religion on the Line.
Good morning. You've got Religion on the Line, the show where we walk together in sharing our belief, our religious experience, bringing the faith perspective to the issues of the day, a crux where the temporal can meet the eternal and the two can talk and maybe even joke a little bit. It's so good to be with you on this Christmas Eve, which looks to be a white Christmas. So it's so good to be with all of you. One disadvantage of having a white Christmas is that the snowplows haven't come quite out, and so we're still getting situated here. It's so good to be with you here this morning. So I'm Bill Scholl, the social justice consultant for the Archdiocese of Kansas City and Kansas, along with
Reverend Robert Lee Hill,
Rabbi Emeritus Temple Bnei Yehuda. Bill, can you hear me?
Yes,
Rick can.
Yeah, we can hear you.
You're not very loud for me.
Okay.
And I wonder if Rick can switch over or something.
You know, that's the first time I've ever heard that, Michael. You're not loud enough.
Sorry. Well, you're loud enough here. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, and arriving just about a minute late for the intro, but Bill covering there. Good morning, Michael. We'll see.
Good morning.
Can you hear
Welcome
me now?
Back.
Can you hear me?
I can, but you both sound kind of low for me.
Okay.
Because every so often we've had this challenge, but let us proceed. If I sound normal to you, I'll keep my good ear to the phone.
Oh, please! And I think we may have done everything that we can do. We'll see. We'll see about enhancing it, but we'll
proceed.
Worst case, we'll
get to a call back again. In the meantime, Merry Christmas to all those folks for whom it will be Christmas tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
And I am correct that for Orthodox, we've still got 12 days more.
I think it's going to be
like January 6th,
seven.
Like
yeah.
That?
Well, normally it's January 6th for them, and I will do some real quick checking on that. But I think you're right, Michael.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, in the meantime, I've got a few items that I would certainly love it if some folks have some specific tradition or notion that they might feel the desirous of sharing with our listeners about what they do Christmas Eve. I know there are some families that have a notion of not setting up the tree until this evening. I know there are folks who do gift exchanging this evening rather than tomorrow. But on deeper levels, the tradition of midnight mass, I presume, is still strong in the greater Kansas City
area?
Yes,
very much. Most churches, almost every Catholic church, will have some version of a midnight mass. Now, often the midnight mass might start a little bit earlier. So 10:30 is like the earliest. So there's some masses start at midnight, but others will might start at 11 and finish at midnight. So, that's a tradition that
I'll probably be the anti-traditionalist by suggesting I think it should start before Christmas so that the climax of the whole thing is it's now Christmas.
That's right.
Almost always they start at about 11, but what Bill's talking about is sometimes 11 is really late for some folks.
Yeah.
And so,
for sure, especially in the Midwest.
that there will be, they won't call them midnight mass, but Protestants as well as Catholics will have some 8 o'clock services, and they'll get out well before midnight. But there is something special about doing the service, Michael. And just as you say, when you come out of the service, it's Christmas Day technically, and you've welcomed in Christmas Day.
Do either of you have a tradition that was passed down from earlier family members that you guys embrace?
Oh yeah, but
I'm not talking sweet potato pie, Bill.
Well, I'm it's going to come close to that. It's going to come close. On Christmas morning, Priscilla and I will have cherry tarts. Jesus does not get born unless we get cherry tarts. I'm telling you, because
do you have any idea how it originated?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. It was the family that kind of adopted me into their embrace in college. Hazel Blaisdell always made cherry tarts on Christmas morning, and so Priscilla has made the crusts, and we will make the pies later on today, or the little pies, little tarts, and we will have those. And it is precious to us. We've done it every year of our marriage. And the interesting thing about it is, among the Blaisdell children, none of them observe it, but I do. So, so at any rate, it's a special thing.
Bill, distinct? Others may do it as well.
I think we're pretty typical in this. We put stockings out, our deal is sort of this: if you wake up, you can come in and say, "Can we go down and look at our stockings?" And you can look at your stockings before Mom and Dad wake up and get our coffee, but you have to wait on the gift. So we do that, and that's been a good compromise. Of course, you know, we do a gift exchange in our family. We all have to take turns, so you kind of have to be present when everyone's opening their presents. You kind of have to pay attention. That can be somewhat with seven kids in the house. That can be kind of difficult, but we've gotten that down. We always do some kind of ceremonial procession where we put the baby Jesus in the manger. Bethany, I don't know where she got it. She had this beautiful plastic baby Italian like Jesus. He's just this gorgeous little plastic doll, but he's classic looking. It's not just a baby. It looks like, I don't know, little gold gilded diaper baby Jesus. And all throughout Advent, if the little kids do a good deed, they get to put some hay in the manger. And so the idea is that you want there to be hay in the manger for the baby Jesus when he comes on Christmas. So we'll do that Christmas morning.
And were any of those things items that either of you brought from family, or it's inventions for the family of your own?
Oh, the stockings and the Christmas presents, that's been the tradition, as I think it is for a lot of families. That's been a tradition. But we did the Beth Ann, my wife, introduced the baby Jesus.
Here's a tradition that we brought from family that made no sense from one generation to another, and so it's been suspended. When I was growing up, our stockings would always be filled with oranges and grapefruit, things that you could eat that wouldn't be, you know, just sour like lime, but always citrus.
Yeah.
Grapefruit and orange. This was a Depression practice. Because those things were few and far between,
right,
and weren't readily available. Well, when we were receiving these in our stockings, we were living in Brownsville, Texas. We had an orange and a grapefruit tree in our backyard. And it would go, why do we put this in our stocking? I can go out and pick one.
We do oranges in our stockings, too.
Yeah, it was a Depression practice, and so I ended that tradition. That made no sense at all. So we don't put citrus fruit in our stockings anymore.
And then one thing we try to do in our family is celebrate. I mean, because in the Catholic Church, the Christmas is an octave. It means it's an 8-day celebration. There's actually 8 days of liturgical celebration of Christmas, and so we try to observe each day, each of the feast day. But one of the things that's really popular in our house, it's something my wife and I started, was on December 28th, which is the Feast of the Holy Innocents. So all those babies that Herod killed trying to get at Jesus, we call those the Holy Innocents, and we celebrate their feast day on December 28th. So what we'll do is Beth Ann will make like a cake or some cupcakes, and she'll put a red button in one of the cupcakes. And the kids for dessert will all have a cupcake. And whoever gets the red button, they become Herod. I go outside with that kid, and we sit in the car, and everyone else hides. And so Herod has to come in and find everybody. And then as soon as he finds someone, then you become one of Herod's soldiers, And then, you know, the last person to be found then is the baby Jesus. That's the object of the game. And our kids, even in college now, they still want to do that. So you get bragging rights if you're the last one found. So
then, again, yeah. Did either of you grow up with this is the first time I've ever heard this particular game.
I've never heard of that game.
No, so, you know what? I heard it. I learned that from a friend of mine who grew up in a large Catholic family, and it was something his mom did. And I just thought, wow, this is, and this must be how those traditions get started. Maybe saying this on the radio will spread it. It's my kids love it. I love it. It's really a lot of fun. But I heard about it from.
First, we better make sure that OSHA doesn't hear about the button in the cupcake.
Yeah, the button in the.
Hey, we need to take a break. We're going to be right back after these messages here at Religion on the Line. Do give us a call in this special Christmas Eve edition of our show, 576-7710. Good morning. You've got Religion on the Line here at KCMO Radio's Talk Radio, 710 AM, 103.7 FM, and also KMAJ 1440. Thank you for allowing us to be part of your Christmas Eve morning here at Religion on the Line. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with
Bill Scholl, Social Justice Consultant for the Archdiocese of Kansas City, Kansas, along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehuda.
Michael, you were saying, and we hadn't gotten very far, in terms of topics, etc.
The two of you were kind enough to share some of the traditions in your families for this sacred season, and I am certainly hopeful that others might join that chorus, and that, as Bill suggested, maybe somebody will grab on to another tradition and embrace it and include it in their ritual. In all seriousness, Bill, how big is the button?
We have a big, I'd say it's about the size of a quarter. About the size
okay,
of a quarter.
You know where I'm going, the notion that it would be impossible for somebody to take a bite big enough that they had the button, but they didn't know it until it was too late.
That's true. The danger makes it.
But I do hope people will pick up on that. And then if you're ready, I've got
a few other
items that we can throw out there for possible conversation, reflection, and folks joining in.
We can, but one more tradition, and then why don't we go to a caller?
Who's
already called in.
Wonderful.
One more tradition, and this is a very strange one. It's not one that I practiced. It's one that we did in an Advent workshop. From time to time, those crop up, and you know, it's how to help families learn how to experience the season and also celebrate it at home as well. And that's called the Advent Buzzard. And what you do is you take a sock and you make a buzzard with various, I guess, a black sock with a white hood or something like that, and you draw a face on it. And then you drive out the forces of darkness because, you know, Advent goes up to the winter solstice and past it, of course. But by the 21st of December, you've approached it, and this is the darkest time of year. And this Advent buzzard helps you drive out the forces of darkness out of the world. Very strange thing, but it is a tradition. It is a practice of some sort, a kind of a fun way to include children as well. So.
Sure.
All right, here's Alan. How about that? Alan, you've got Religion on the Line. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Great. Good. And you?
Good. I just have two quick things. First of all, as it's Christmas Eve for us in the Christian community, I hope that we all remember that we're all creations of Father God, who has absolute and unquestionable love for all of us. And I hope that whether Jew or other religion, that we at Christmas time acknowledge that we are all creations of God and loved by God.
Okay.
Bravo.
Yeah.
And then secondly, I don't know if you all saw this week, but there was a Christmas book released that was broadly covered across the news that, quite frankly, really scared me. And it was the story of Santa Claus, but his wife was a transsexual, and that this book was being broadly bought and sold throughout the United States. And while I'm a very open-minded person, personally, that really scared me as to, you know, are the most basic things of our Christmas, the things that children learn, are we bringing up a generation with some really scary mindsets? So those were my comments,
Alan,
for you.
Alan, would you repeat what was scary? Either it was so brief, I thought I was listening carefully, but...
Transgender wife for Santa Claus. Do you have any idea what the title of this book is?
All you got to do is look on the internet. It's all over it, Michael. I mean, it made all the major news lines. It's the story of it's the traditional story of Santa going out, you know, to deliver his presents, and in the North Pole, Santa's wife is a man. And he's black. And he's black.
The wife.
Yes, but his wife is a man.
So do you think the effort of the story is to teach tolerance or to literally put down some tradition? By the way, one of the things I want to bring up later is the whole notion of, is it okay to quote-unquote lie to children about Santa Claus? But
well, Michael, I think the scary thing about the book is that its attempt is to teach that we live in a society where what we consider to be male, female, as being the standard of marriage is no longer what children should be learning, and that we should be learning a view where various other views are acceptable, including homosexual relationships, and Santa Claus was used as the vehicle to communicate this. Mm-hmm. And at least for me,
I must admit, I've not seen or heard any of this.
Well,
I would be stunned if families that felt that this was somehow wrong would allow it to penetrate into their families. But we'll check it out for sure.
Oh, Michael, it is all over the internet. Just enter at the next break. Enter some church search terms. And you'll find this beautiful picture of Santa Claus with an African American male wife.
Guys, by the way, just the one I did get this week was the elves totally upset with Santa Claus because of his poor management. They work like crazy, and the logistics is one night. This is insane.
Michael. Thank you. All right. Thank you, Alan.
You guys all have a great Christmas, and I pray this year for all of us to grow in our individual faiths and to have respect for each other and our own religious traditions.
All righty.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Amen.
We'll look into the Santa book and check it out and see what's going on.
Had either of you heard of it?
No, and I was just searching on my phone, and I don't see anything. So,
hey, we need to take a break. We're going to be right back after these messages here at Religion on the Line. You give us a call, 576-7710. You've Got Religion on the Line here at KCMO Talk Radio, 710 AM, 103.7 FM, and also 1440 AM KMAJ. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with
Bill Scholl with the Archdiocese of Kansas City, Kansas, along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehuda.
So, Michael, I had misunderstood what Alan was saying. So it's a children's book called Santa's Husband, and it's a black Santa with a white husband. It's not a transgender anything, so far as I can see. It's a homosexual relationship that's being promoted and supported, and that's the thesis of the book. But there's both positive and negative comments by people who've read it. There's some artwork that looks pretty lame, but it doesn't look like even the folks who are progressive think the book is of much quality so far, from what I've seen. But we'll look into it.
Okay.
All right.
So, in
the meantime, may I throw in one
absolutely
tradition that we had in my family for Hanukkah?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So one of the commonplaces during the year, and this is harder nowadays since so much more is done with credit cards, is every evening when the family got home, anyone who had change in their pocket would put it in what we call a tzedakah box, a charity container. And right before Hanukkah, before anybody got any gifts, we opened the charity box and we counted how much we had, and then as a family we made a decision where those funds would be directed and how we might supplement it from our own allowances and so on to be sure that it was that much more of impact in terms of the causes that we wanted to support. I offer it especially because, and this is a time where the consumerism can overwhelm way too much.
Wonderful, wonderful tradition. Can we steal it?
I'm offering it for free.
Yeah. That's a lovely tradition, yeah.
The challenge is, do you come home with change anymore?
Not much. No. You know, from time to time, we're using either credit cards. I'm one of the few people who does not have a debit card. Most younger folks.
I join your company. I don't even understand the value of a debit card because it seems to me that it's much better for the bank, but not for me.
That's what I've always thought, Michael. But a lot of people don't like to carry cash and love a debit card because they know exactly what they have, and if they don't have it, then the debit card won't work.
Yeah.
So it can be a good stewardship of your resources. So, all right. So that is one of your traditions. What else? Either tradition or other topics.
What else do I have to throw into the fire?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to figure out a way to send this to both of you. So far I've had no success. You know how sophisticated I am on the internet. This morning's Sunday. Well, this morning Sunday's New York Times. There's a remarkable interview by Nicholas Kristof. Every Christmas Eve-ish, he does, at least for the last couple of years, he's done an interview with some major figure in American Christianity. And this one is titled, Cardinal, Am I a Christian? And he's interviewing Cardinal Joseph Tobin of Newark. Bill, have you heard of him? He's new to me.
No, not necessarily.
Yeah, well, he certainly... let me put it this way. He comes across in this interview as a preciously open-minded prince of the church. May I spend a moment on one area?
Sure.
One area where the Catholic Church... This is Kristof speaking. And Kristof, it regularly asks, am I a Christian even though I'm a skeptic? Okay. One area where the Catholic Church seems to be antiquated is gender. If Jesus trusted women like Mary Magdalene, if Phoebe could be a leader of the early church, then why can't women be priests or cardinals today? Now, sounds a little bit hostile, doesn't it?
Uh-huh.
Here's his response. Those are two different questions. Regarding priests, it really is a stumbling block for people, and especially in this country and in this culture, as all areas of life are opening up to women, then that this particular ministry in the Catholic Church is not. So I understand the consternation. I have 8 sisters. I know for some women this sort of stumbling block takes them away from the church. As for cardinals, most are bishops, but not all of them. As recently as the 19th century, there were lay people who were cardinals. So Christoph follows up, so will we see women cardinals soon? Maybe. My theology isn't sophisticated enough, but I don't believe that there's a compelling theological reason why the Pope couldn't name a woman cardinal. This person's mind is fascinating to me.
Absolutely. I see the article now, Michael, this is in Today's Times.
The Sunday Morning Times.
Sunday Morning Times, yeah. All right.
Yeah. So both of you guys have got to take a look at it.
We'll look at it, yeah.
I think there's some...
So Cardinal Tobin,
uniqueness
am
to
I
his
Christian?
Openness and his clarity of his principles.
I think...
That's encouraging, I think. Now, I do have other things if we want to throw them in.
I just wanted to comment real quickly on that. I think that's a great distinction he's making. And I did not know lay Catholics have ever been cardinals. I knew deacons were, and that was the code of canon law was changed in the early part of the 20th century, so it could just be bishops. But they could change the canon law, I suppose, and I think that's a good distinction, and that might be a good move. But you know,
news to me, Bill.
I'd have to. I'm going to look into that. But your statement reminds me of something. I once had a chance to hear Kimberly Hahn speak, and she's the wife of Dr. Scott Hahn, but she's a great speaker in her own right, and she was talking about the issue of women priests, and she said, you know, really, it's not so much an issue of sexism as more of an issue of casting, because priests act in the person of Jesus Christ. They have a very special role. They're acting in the person of Christ, and that's why it's fitting and necessary that they be male. And she made this point. She said, you know, Nick Nolte is an amazing actor. He's a very talented actor. But you'd never cast him to play the Virgin Mary in a movie about the Nativity. Likewise, we don't cast women to be in the role and act in the person of Christ. And I mean, there's more arguments to be had, but I thought that was a really good sort of dialectical argument to help Catholics get their head around, you know, what is the priest actually doing? But there is sort of an occupational hazard, I think, which is the cardinal's talking about, is it can send the message that women don't have leadership gifts to give to the church. Because part of the priesthood is being part of a hierarchy. So that might be a great remedy to help address that and bring what John Paul II called the feminine genius into some important deliberations of the church. Anyway, I just wanted to share that comment.
Yeah, I appreciate it. But what blew me away, really, it's a fairly hostile question. Although it's, you know, clearly I wasn't there for the interview and all that sort of stuff, but I loved that his response begins with, "I understand you're living in a culture where, you know," and then his distinction that, well, it's two different questions, cardinals and bishops, and cardinals and priests.
Yeah.
At any rate, did you guys by any chance see this one? Siri, should people asking their iPhone, Siri, should I believe in God?
No. I didn't see that.
Now, here's a couple of the responses. So, folks, keep listening and don't go to your phone right yet. You'll receive the reply. These are some of them. I would ask that you address your spiritual questions to someone more qualified to comment, ideally a human. Or, here's a good one, it's all a mystery to me, but this is the best one. And this is the one I got, by the way. I believe in the separation of silicone and spirit.
Well, then some smart programmers then.
The deeper article is the whole notion of how we may be becoming, I'm going to use my words here, so much more materialistic than previous generations even because of this total dependency on technology for the information that gets in the way of thinking. I mean, I'm fascinated, for example, I'll give my own example. I'm fascinated with how rarely now I turn to the books in my library, I turn to a search engine.
Yeah. Because you can almost always find the quote from the book.
Right.
On the net. Hey, Michael, we need to take a break, but we're going to come back and talk about an AI deity and a new religion that was created over the last couple of years. So that is in line with your comment just there. So we're going to be right back here at Religion on the Line, 576-7710. Give us a call. Got Religion on the Line here at KCMO. Our new theme song right here, Religion on the Line. I'm Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church, along with
Bill Scholl with the Archdiocese of Kinston in Kansas, along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus Temple B'nai Yehuda.
All right, Michael, you said you were you had a few other items.
I got a few other items
here. Yeah.
By the way, this is from the Talmud with regard to the whole notion of how important giving rather than receiving, and specifically charity. One of the ancient sages named Rav Asi, you know, very few people use that name anymore, teaches the commandment to give charity is considered equivalent to all of the other mitzvot in the Torah. Then Rabbi Elazar teaches that someone who gives charity in secret is greater than Moses.
Michael, not to push back, but to just ask for a little clarity.
Yeah.
So if I'm on the corner and the guy that I know that he will drink this because I've worked with him because he's come around to the church a while.
Right.
I'm reflecting on my own experience at Community Christian Church.
And it's a contemporary dilemma for sure.
And do you give money, which will probably enable the habitual behavior? I have no problem with giving food at any time or clothing or shelter or anything like that to anybody in need, even if they've acted irresponsibly and gotten them themselves into a position like that. But I'm hesitating more and more about money because it's such a...
I happen to agree with you. I don't give money on the street. Karen will from time to time, but I've been burnt, I think, and I think I'm too often contributing to a destructive habit.
Mm-hmm.
But I do give McDonald's gift certificates. It's the only thing I do with McDonald's.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. All right.
And I suppose I'm investigating in my own head as I say that. Gee, are you contributing to ill health?
But maybe shortening of a life, but also extending it at least for a day. You never know. Yeah. All right.
But this is a true story. It happened to Karen last year. She was on the street, walking home right before Christmas. It was cold. It was a Chicago winter day. And she found a woman on the street who was underclothed and clearly not fully focused. What to do? Most people ignore, right?
Mm-hmm.
Come with me, and she took her into a restaurant. They got some warmth, and then she took her to the fire station, which here is one of the avenues into getting social services help.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah.
Wow! Oh, way to go, Karen.
True story.
And I'm haunted too. Even as I say, describe my hesitancy. I'm always reminded of a practice of one of my dear friends, Dale Eldred, who would surprise his wife at Robbie Lord and just stop in the middle of winter, driving around, seeing somebody, and then go over, especially almost at Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, and give them $10 or $20,
mm-hmm.
a person on the street. And he came back and he says, "My mother always taught me everybody is somebody's baby."
Jeez,
you know.
Nice.
And you can't trump that. So, hey, why don't we go to a caller real quick before we get to the rest of your list?
We may never get there, I hope.
Okay. We're going to go to Alan. Alan, you've got... No, Mike. Mike, you've got Religion on the Line. Good morning.
Morning, Dr. Hill, Bill, Rabbi Zedek. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, too.
Thank you. You, too.
My wife told me about a site where it had history of the cake box business that was here in Kansas City. She thought I would be interested because I used to be related to that business some way. So I looked it up, and I came across the thing about the 25th anniversary of your show. It's in Flatland, KC.
Hmm.
The website.
Okay. Yes, right. Bill Timaeus,
yeah.
Right. Uh-huh.
And he was talking about how Rabbi Zedek kicked the whole thing off after Marshall Saper's passing.
Correct.
And I remember all that real well. I listened to Marshall Saper all the time. And were you guys friends with Mike Murphy?
Yeah, yeah. Mike was a special kind of... He was the funniest man I'd ever heard on radio.
Yeah.
That was the day. That was radio instead of this, you know, Mark Levin and all these guys. That was so good. And
yeah.
Anyway,
his interviews with Mayor Charlie Wheeler were I felt must hear TV
radio.
Gracious, radio.
Yeah. But, yeah.
By the way, but for those who don't know, Mike Murphy was a pillar of talk radio when it was more about personalities and opportunities and reflection and fun and celebration. For many years in Kansas City, he started the what was it? Was it the St. Patrick's Day thing where they came out of a with
the
cows?
The parade with the
with the cattle drive.
The cattle drive,
yeah. And then and Marshall Saper, there's probably significant numbers who don't know that name. Marshall Saper, who alas took his own life some years ago now. Was a pioneering talk show radio psychologist. He dominated his time period in the greater Kansas City area.
Mm-hmm.
Had the funniest, driest sense of humor I think I've ever heard.
Well, he was dry, and he also wouldn't tolerate fools and foolishness. So.
No, I have a whole bunch of stories. I won't say them on the radio, but he was a funny man. Anyway, I appreciate the show, and it's been a personal help to me, and it's a high intellectual tone, and Bill knows all the historical things there, and you all know the scriptures, and I just really enjoy listening every week. It's probably, I can't think of a better higher tone program in Kansas City that I can get than your show.
Well, we can get awful too.
Well, you know.
Oh, thank you, Mike.
Well, now
thank you so much.
Thank you, Mike. That's a big Christmas gift. Thank you, and a good Hanukkah present as well. And we would say this: your generosity has now outstripped your judgment. So we thank you.
I'm not much on generosity, but I did donate money to the Great Plains SPCA in honor of the show.
Oh, wow.
Oh, thank you.
Wow. You know what? I think I have your address, and I'm going to send you, Mike, our top 20 religious news stories, top 20 books, top religious stories in KC, top 10 movies, that list, if you would like it.
I'd love that. Now,
All right.
Are you going to do a year-end thing about who passed, like the Oscars?
Yeah, yeah. We're going to do that next week, I think. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Mike.
Okay, thank you all.
All right. We got to take a break, listen to some news. We'll be back after these messages. Please participate and give us a call, 576-7710, 576-7710, here at Religion on the Line.